Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high quality continuing education and training for all UK registered optometrists. You can gain one CET point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. I'm Michelle Hanratty. I'm an IP optometrist based in Birmingham and an assessor and examiner for the college's scheme for registration. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we're exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. We recently put out a survey to you, our listeners, asking which topics you wanted to hear about, and this month's topic was requested by 80% of the responses. Acute red eye is a common presentation in primary eye care, and patients could potentially present to a pharmacist, optometrist, or GP. In the absence of trauma, it is a sign of infection or inflammation. And while most cases are due to fairly benign conditions, such as conjunctivitis, a small proportion can be more serious and require urgent treatment. The challenge is in the differentiation between them. Shortly, we'll be speaking with consultant ophthalmologist David Lockington to delve deeper into acute red eye. But first, producer Izzy Clark spoke with Robert Longhurst, consultant optometrist for Health Harmony and honorary optometrist consultant at Royal Berkshire Hospital. He saw an unusual amount of viral conjunctivitis when COVID was on the rise in the early spring of 2020.
I've been working in the eye casualty department. With COVID, there's been some changes in some of the things that have been presenting into the eye casualty, and most notably, cases of viral conjunctivitis probably quadrupled over the period. That causes some interesting questions about red eye and viral conjunctivitis and coronavirus.
So what were those signs and the symptoms of all of these patients?
So viral conjunctivitis is very similar to bacterial conjunctivitis, but the difference being, and normally with viral conjunctivitis, obviously it's caused by a virus. So normally people would come in and they'd say, oh, actually I've had a recent illness of some kind. I've had a cough or a temperature or felt very tired. Unusually in a lot of these new cases, they weren't saying that at all. They felt quite fit and well at the time they were coming in. They just had this really red eye. They were saying it was gritty feeling, a burning feeling, which is probably true of all kinds of conjunctivitis. The difference being when you examine them, they had follicles, collections of lymphocytes basically on the conjunctiva. And they also had pseudomembrane formation, a lot of them, which are kind of membranes that cover the conjunctiva, can be caused by mucus or fibrin or bacteria and things like that, but it can also be caused by immune system cells. So when you see those things straight away, you think, oh, this is more viral than bacterial. And obviously with bacteria, you tend to get a lot of discharge throughout the day, crusting, whereas these cases, and certainly in viral cases, that any discharge is more watery, and these patients were coming in with more of a watery discharge, perhaps some crusting in the morning.
I see. So what did you first think when you sort of saw this, and especially with an increase in numbers as well?
Yeah, it just took me by surprise initially that suddenly all these people are coming in with viral conjunctivitis, and I thought, oh, this is really strange, what's going on? And then obviously the news broke about coronavirus in the UK, and I kind of put two and two together. And then I started following up some of these patients just to see what was going on. And one patient in particular, when we called her, we did a telephone consultation then because the lockdown happened and we were doing more remote consultations. Yeah, some of the patients, and this one in particular, was like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Why? And she was like, oh, because a week after I saw you in the hospital, I had all these crazy symptoms. I couldn't breathe properly and I was diagnosed with COVID-19. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I was a little bit worried then, thinking, crikey, oh, I've had all these patients coming in with all these red eyes, and how many of them actually were COVID-19 positive? So it made me worry a little bit.
And then once we were in lockdown, and as you said, you're doing phone consultations, how what can you do at that point?
What was really difficult in some of these cases is that possibly these COVID-19 red eyes, these viral conjunctivitis, they seemed a little bit more severe than normal viral conjunctivitis. So normally within 2 weeks, everything clears up on its own. So you kind of just tell people to use cold compresses and things like that to avoid sharing towels because obviously it's contagious. But with these cases, they just weren't responding. So a few of these patients were coming back saying, look, it's just as bad, nothing's changed. So then we were prescribing Maxidex steroid drops and levofloxacin as well. Then obviously because they have the Maxidex, they should really have their pressure checked afterwards, but then lockdown happened and so you just can't do it over the phone, you can't check their pressures. So it was all a little bit strange, but luckily when I did phone them after their treatment, the red eye seemed to go away, but some of them did have this COVID-19 symptoms then, which was obviously more serious to them than just their red eye.
Absolutely. So they were showing the red eye symptoms before they had like the onset of what we would consider usual COVID symptoms.
Yeah, that's what was so interesting, because you'd expect them to have all the other symptoms before the red eye.
Just how did you feel at the time?
So scared, really, especially early on, because we kind of didn't have PPE initially. So patients were just coming in as normal. It would be unusual for anyone to wear gloves. None of us were wearing any kind of face mask or anything like that. And certainly the patients weren't. So they were just bowling in like normal red eye patients, just with all my eyes a bit red, you know, what's going on? The hospital I work in are really good at wiping down all the equipment anyway. That was all routine. But certainly wearing PPE wasn't routine until the government advice then was issued. But we were very lucky where we were. Straight away, we had face masks and aprons and gloves. And they were readily available. Only big challenge is finding the slit lamp eyepieces steaming up when you wear a mask. So you're then trying to examine patients holding your breath.
That was consultant optometrist Robert Longhurst. We'll be coming back to viral conjunctivitis later on, but this is just one category of red eye. Producer Izzy is here with us and has had first-hand experience of having an acute red eye herself. And being a contact lens wearer, it could have been potentially serious. So Izzy, what happened?
So last year, I woke up one Saturday and my right eye started feeling really scratchy. I thought I'd just leave it a bit, see if it cleared up on itself. And by the next day, it was so painful. So I took myself off to Moorfields A&E just to see what was going on.
And did you feel a bit worried at that point? Quite scared?
Yeah, definitely. Well, for me personally, wearing contact lenses, I was so paranoid of something going wrong. So when this happened, I found myself sitting in A&E like, oh God, what is this going to be? Like, what does this mean?
And did you actually find out what the problem was when you got there?
Yeah, so they had a look and they said that there was bacteria on my pupil. I don't really know much more than that, but I was given eye drops to deal with this and I had to take them for about 10 days. And the first 48 hours, it was every single hour. So a lot of alarms were being set to make sure that I didn't miss those crucial eye drops.
And so how quickly did you improve? Was it literally an improvement within the first day or did it take a little bit longer?
I would say it took longer than that. I still was quite aware of it sort of towards the end of the week. And then after day five, I'd say it sort of picked up and I felt much more confident in it. But it was one of those things where I was so strict with taking the eye drops because I was so scared that anything could go wrong. When you think like, oh, is my eyesight going to be jeopardised by this? You don't want to take any risks.
Let's bring in David Lockington, who's a consultant ophthalmologist in Glasgow with a subspecialty fellowship training in cataract, cornea and anterior segment. David, how common are situations like this?
Hi, Michelle, and thanks for involving me in your podcast. These situations are surprisingly common. Patients wake up with red eyes and they panic because they don't know if it's trivial or if it's sinister.
And what tends to be the cause of their misery in your experience?
So it's extremely varied. And one thing I'd really wish to remind your listeners is that red eye is not a diagnosis. It's both a symptom, which is something a patient complains about, but it's also a sign, which is something the clinician identifies as abnormal. That's one of the reasons we need to see these patients to take a proper history and do a proper examination to try to work out what is the emergency, what is trivial and what is sight-threatening.
And if a patient is a contact lens wearer, they need to be treated with extra caution as well, don't they?
Yes, for want of a better phrase, they have a piece of plastic in their eye. And so we need to treat that with respect.
Yeah, so it's all about evaluating the risk, really, isn't it? Because every time you fit a patient with a contact lens, you are actually adding in another layer of risk to their ocular health.
Yes, and we all want to believe the best and deny the worst. So every time you survey optometrists, they all say, yes, we gave them all the risks. And every time you ask a patient who's had a problem, they always say, nobody ever told me there could be a problem.
So if a patient does happen to present to their optometrist rather than to casualty first, complaining of a sore eye, what do you think are the first things we should ask them? What do we need to ascertain?
So I always teach the optometrists who do the IP training with me and also my juniors, be a simple person. Do the basics well. Just because someone wears a contact lens, that does not mean their diagnosis is contact lens related. So like I said earlier, you need to do a complete history and do an appropriate examination, asking yourself, what is the most likely diagnosis, but also, what is the worst case diagnosis that I don't want to miss? And if we systematically work from the front to the back of the eye, we may not know what the diagnosis is, but we'll be picking up lots of good clinical signs to give us a clue as to what is sinister and what is trivial. That is how you arrive at the correct diagnosis of a red eye, be it contact lens related or not.
So what are the key signs to look out for that would set alarm bells going off in your mind?
So I don't know if you remember the Marks and Spencer's adverts, which said things like, it's not just a cheesecake, it's a Marks and Spencer's cheesecake with chocolate and other things. So in the red eye, we get concerned if there are additional features affecting other structures in the anterior segment. So that's what your history and examination is looking out for. So first up, is this an eye problem at all? Is the patient sick? Is it a skin problem that they've got shingles or cellulitis? And then once you get down to the eyeball, working from the lids backwards, you can identify which aspects of the eye are affected. And that allows you to hone your diagnosis.
That's really interesting that you say that, because we were talking to a vitreoretinal specialist not so long ago, and he said the same thing. Start at the front of the eye and work back. Because it is tempting, isn't it, when you're a clinician that's perhaps a little bit out of their depth, just to jump into what you think the diagnosis and go straight in on that and then miss all those other signs.
Absolutely. And I think also when you see quite severe pathology, the anxious reaction is to switch your brain off, panic, and not do the simple things well. You need to have as much information as possible, which is reasonable, to come to your diagnosis. Why would you want to solve a crime without all the evidence? So I say that it's like playing Cluedo. You want to know exactly what's going on to make the correct allegation of diagnosis.
So we've covered asking the right questions. What is it that you want to find out from the patient? What about particular symptoms that patients might complain of that would make you worry or be more concerned?
So as I said, it's the associated symptoms. It's the systemic symptoms. So in a red eye, if they're photophobic, it's probably the cornea. If they're vomiting, it may well be pressure. If they are extremely watery, it could be an abrasion or a surface issue. If they're systemically unwell, we need to remember the other sinister features, such as scleritis, which has a connective tissue disease association, things like that. Or have they had a, you know, are we assuming too much here? Do we need to step back and ask, have they had a chemical injury? You know, there are a range of sinister, severe conditions which we need to act quickly to prevent damage and further damage to the eye. And one of those, as you mentioned, is contact lens keratitis. So in the case of contact lens keratitis, you want to ask yourself, has the patient been doing any high-risk behaviour? And then when you look at the cornea, are you seeing features which concern you? For example, those associated with acanthamoeba.
Yes, because that's the scary one, isn't it, that we're all worried about.
Very much so, because whenever it presents, it often is thought about late and therefore the bug has got more involved in the cornea. Mm.
So often when it's referred, it might be that it's progressed a bit. But if we were to try and stop it in its tracks a little bit earlier, what key things are we looking for?
So the classical description is the eye is more painful than it looks. So a patient is because those corneal nerves are inflamed and infected, and that's the source of the pain.
Mm.
It is the most common misdiagnosis of what is termed atypical herpetic eye disease. And my other main message I'd want to share today is do not diagnose herpes simplex in a contact lens wearer until you've got positive proof or you've at least considered the potential that it might be acanthamoeba. Because the earlier you suspect it, the earlier you can test for it, and the better the outcomes when you treat it.
Okay, so if you did have a person that had presented with a red eye and you thought, well, could be acanthamoeba, but I'm not really sure, I don't want to look a bit silly by referring this patient unnecessarily to casualty, but actually maybe it's time just to refer them anyway because you don't want to take that risk. So how urgent does that referral need to be?
So any clinician's job is triage, and there's the three R's of triage: to reassure, to react, or to refer. And you do those based on your scope of competency, sometimes your confidence, but also you should be being guided by your local eye department who has told you how to refer and how soon. But for me, there are no stupid questions and there are no looking silly referrals. I would rather say to someone, we don't need to worry, than say to someone, I wish we'd dealt with you sooner. So if you're suspicious of acanthamoeba, that should be referred urgently because the optometrist in primary care does neither have the resources or the infrastructure to deal with that. That patient needs a corneal scrape, if appropriate, or a PCR swab, and then put on the appropriate treatment. But often in contact lens-related keratitis, we would assume infection, treat intensively with topical antibiotic drops, and see how it improves. And based on how the condition improves or deteriorates, that will determine the next steps. So you don't want to throw steroids on that red eye, which will make things far worse.
Mm. So if a contact lens wearer comes in and you suspect it might be herpetic, but you're not sure, best to be cautious and refer it in case it could be acanthamoeba.
Well,
treat it with caution.
Treat it with caution. If you think they're infective and it's a small infiltrate, you can empirically treat with a broad-spectrum antibiotic like ofloxacin and see how it goes. If it's a big infiltrate, I think you should be referring because the patient will need scraped. If you think it's atypical, and by that I mean herpetic, fungal, or acanthamoeba, that needs to be seen by the specialists who have the specialist equipment to do the appropriate tests.
You have preempted my last question actually on this, which was what are the potential risks if it isn't treated quickly? You said it is imperative that we do get it treated quickly, but what is the worst case scenario?
Well, I mean, we often say the worst case scenario is you lose your eye. And we think that, we say that sort of facetiously. However, certain bugs such as Neisseria gonorrhea, which is sexually transmitted, that is known to perforate a cornea within 48 hours if it's untreated. So we do need to be suspicious. Similarly, if somebody has a particularly virulent bug, sometimes Pseudomonas, which is associated with contact lens ulcers, that can have very significant impact. And then even if you got on top of the infection and saved the cornea from perforating, from melting due to inflammation, and you settled it all down, the patient will still be left with visual deterioration because they'll have a scar in what should be their clear window cornea. So obviously we want to treat as soon as possible.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we're exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists, and that's where we want to hear from you. So if you have a question for us, email podcast@docket.info or tweet @soundoptometry. I'm joined by consultant ophthalmologist David Lockington. Earlier, we discussed why it's important to treat bacterial keratitis quickly, but how do you do that?
The main treatment of infection is antibiotics. And so we would start intensive drops for 48 hours, just as Izzy experienced. And that's dependent on the severity of the infection and how much of the cornea is involved. If it's a large ulcer, we will want to take a little sample, a scrape, to see if we can identify the actual bug. But generally, we often prescribe broad-spectrum antibiotics. Only when this infection is sterilised would the eye department consider cautious use of steroids. to dampen the inflammation.
Is microbial keratitis ever something that an optometrist can tackle on their own if they're IP qualified? Or would you rather just see it the eye as it is in hospital before it's had any treatment?
I think it depends on your local guidelines, and I would encourage everyone to have an open channel of communication between primary and secondary care, because if you know what the recommendations are, then expectations will be matched. For me, it depends on the severity of the ulcer, and it depends on the ability of the IP optometrist to not only make the diagnosis, but document the findings and monitor for change. So, for example, if there's a very small peripheral ulcer, that could be empirically treated without a scrape by an IP optometrist with something like ofloxacin 8 times a day and monitored regularly. And if it's small and not particularly virulent, stopping the contact lenses and that management may well settle things down. However, if there's any concern which is outside the optometrist's scope of practice, they should seek advice and help, and then maybe they'll be able to help with the ongoing management and a co-management arrangement. But again, it really depends on your local eye services setup.
Is there any issue with starting a patient on antibiotics? And if that eye has had that antibiotic in it, would it affect the reliability of the scrape of the microbiology test that you do on that scrape?
So it can do. And if people have been on topical antibiotics for a long time, often we would stop to see what bugs can grow before you then try to sample them. But the reality is, we start empiric treatment in the hospital as well while we wait for the scrape results to come back. So for example, if you pick up a tube of chloramphenicol, it will say on the side not to be used in contact lens wearers. Very few people ask why. The real reason is because chloramphenicol is not effective against Pseudomonas, and Pseudomonas is the most common bug which causes problems with contact lens wearers. Therefore, if you're going to treat effectively and early, you want a drop which will cover the most likely bugs. And for the community, that's often monotherapy with ofloxacin, siloxin, exicin. Or if in the hospital, we sometimes use combination things like gentamicin and kefuroxime, which cover most of the common bugs.
Okay. So, David, what do you think of the use of steroids for pink eyes that present in practice, sometimes for dry eye? What's your opinion on that?
So, as I said previously, pink eye is not a diagnosis, as red eye is not a diagnosis. Yes, there's likely inflammation, so the temptation is to use an anti-inflammatory like a steroid, but that can do harm if there is actually an infection. So the safe practice would be, do not give steroids unless you know the diagnosis. The focus should be on correct diagnosis. If we get the diagnosis right, then the management will follow. And therefore, you will use steroids as just another weapon in your arsenal when you know what the correct condition is.
So we heard earlier about viral conjunctivitis as COVID-19 was on the rise throughout the country earlier this year. So have you seen many cases of COVID-19 related viral conjunctivitis yourself?
Thankfully, I haven't. But again, we're not testing the conjunctiva for COVID, so we don't really know if we have or not. That is why we are questionnairing patients before they come for COVID symptoms. And we're assuming everyone is infectious, which is why we wear face masks on the patient and ourselves. We have shields on the slit lamp. We wear gloves. We wear aprons to try to reduce the risk of infection. And this is the type of behaviour we did anytime there was an outbreak of adenoviral conjunctivitis, which can be very contagious. So I think that's the safest way to approach all patients in the present climate.
Are there any emerging trends that you've observed in the last 6 months at all in casualty?
Well, I would take a different tact in terms of COVID. And my biggest concern at the minute is all the missing patients we have due to the restrictions in clinics and theatre capacity and the obvious delays to care. And to me, that may well be the hidden pandemic which we find about in the years to come. But one of the emergent issues we keep seeing is not actually COVID, but it's mask-associated dry eye due to everybody wearing poorly fitting face masks.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
So we have all these patients who wear a face mask, but what they're doing inadvertently is they're blowing their breath over their ocular surface, and that exacerbates their dry eye symptoms. So I think mask-associated dry eye is going to be an increasing condition, particularly as people have to work from home, they're on their computers a lot. It's going to bring out a lot more symptoms.
And finally, what are your top tips when it comes to dealing with acute red eye?
So hopefully this discussion has been educational and entertaining at some level. But I think the most important thing is that you step back, you don't panic, and you take your time. You remember that red eye is not a diagnosis, so you need to get a diagnosis. And you do that by taking an appropriate history and an examination working from front to back. If you ask yourself, when you come to the diagnosis, what's the most likely diagnosis and what's the worst case diagnosis you don't want to miss, that should keep you right, because you'll stick within your competency. And if you can use guidelines from your local eye hospital, that will help you to know how do you triage these patients and how do you help them, either by reassurance, by reacting, or referring.
David Lockerton, thank you very much. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. If you would like more information about dealing with acute red eye, go to our website, docket.info, and search for Sound Optometry to find the reading materials. Listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise will gain one CT point covering communication and ocular disease, and for IP optometrists, knowledge and options. Next time, we'll be discussing another popular topic from our survey, medical retina. We'd really appreciate it if you help spread the word about the podcast, tell your colleagues to listen, or subscribe to the series so you don't miss an episode. I'm Michelle Hanratty, and the producer is Izzy Clark. Thanks for listening.